You're listening to the Post-Apocalyptic Media Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to this 91st episode of the Post-Apocalyptic Media Podcast. I am your host, Sean, senior editor here at postapocalyptic.com. And I'm joined this week by a very special guest, Mr. Anthony Pollock, the editor-in-chief at Soda and Telepaths. How you doing, Anthony?
Good, thanks, Sean. Yourself?
Oh, I'm great. Yeah, it's good. It's always good to have a guest on. And you and I have been chatting a few times. You had a project on Kickstarter that I covered a couple months ago, and that was producing the end of the world, the anthology, yeah. Right?
I edited that and put that all together.
And so it was one of those things where we started chatting a few times, and I noticed that you're kind of like me, where you have a million things going at once, and I think that's exciting. You can tell that you have a passion for this. You have a passion for podcasting and for pop culture and comics, especially, right? So tell us a little bit about what all you have going on.
So Soda and Telepaths is a website which covers mainly horror and science fiction. We do cover the odd superhero stuff because, unfortunately, when you get into comics, you kind of can't really get away from it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, with yourselves, with post-apocalyptic stuff, you can't really not talk about Terminator or The Walking Dead. It's always there. Yeah. So, but we mainly cover horror and science fiction. We cover comics. We're starting to get more into TV. We've been a media partner with Shudder for quite a long time. Shudder, the horror streaming service. So we've been covering their horror films for about a year or two now. So that's pretty much what we do in a crunch. Like you sort of mentioned and alluded to, we released we're getting it printed now, post-apocalyptic anthology that we put together. The idea behind that was really just to tell stories from a different light. Sort of my one rule with that was that there couldn't be any zombies because I feel like that's been done to death with Romero and Kirkman and those types. That's kind of what we got going on.
Awesome. So I think it's funny too that I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, I cover Walking Dead each week for the site, but I'm kind of in that same boat where it's like, I'm kind of past zombies at this, at this point in time where we've done it to death. And now, don't get me wrong, like the last episode of Walking Dead had some really gory stuff, and I love gory stuff. And so when they can bring that out, it's great, that gets me right there. I like that. I feel your pain. It's a lot. Zombies everywhere. And even games, I'm a big gamer, and there's just zombie games everywhere. And there are so many times when I'm playing a survival game and I'm like, I just want to survive and build stuff. I don't want zombies coming in all the time. I don't know.
I've listened to some of your episodes, and you're obviously a big Fallout fan. And yeah. I think I did everything in Fallout 4, but I've been getting into Far Cry. A bit late to the scene with that, but Far Cry 5 is arguably a post-apocalyptic game. Have you played it?
No, I haven't. I've played 4. I've heard really, really good things about 5.
Yeah, if you love Fallout 4, I would be very surprised if you didn't like Far Cry 5.
Nice.
It's sort of that type of game, but involving a cult. So it's sort of like in, I don't know, the closest sort of real cult reference we could probably make to it, probably a bit like the family, but a bit more southern. Mm. Bit like Charles Manson-ish kind of family, but a bit more southern is probably the closest. But yeah, that's a lot of fun. I don't want to spoil it for you, though. There's a good post-apocalyptic ending, but I won't spoil for you what happens. I'll let you check that out yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, I it's on my list. It's definitely, I've watched video after video of that, and I'm, you know, drooling as I'm watching these videos. It looks really, really good.
Yeah, yeah, the gameplay is out of control. It really is. Even the more crazier elements of Fallout 4, where the sort of the ghouls are running at you, just has nothing on Far Cry 5.
that's a
I talked it up enough.
Yeah, that's a selling point right there. I like that. So, would you say that's your favorite game right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, at the moment. Yeah, definitely.
Nice. I stream once a week for the site, and I play, you know, I try to keep it a variety, but I love city builders and, you know, survival games where you build, and I guess it's my age, but I just can't do the Twitch stuff anymore, the twitchy, you know, the twitchy trigger finger stuff. And so I don't know, I'm just really... Right now, I'm playing Dismantle. Have you played that?
No. No, I haven't.
It's like it's an indie game. It's, you basically destroy everything that you come across, but there's like zombie. They call them monsters, but they're zombie-ish. But you know, you break everything apart and you use the pieces and build your settlement kind of thing. It's a pretty basic, you know, simple game, but it's nice for just, you know, when you need a mindless game to play. It's nice for that.
I'm a bit of a sucker for those bunker games that have ended up on mobile platforms, where you just sort of start with a base and you're sort of just building downwards. It does sort of make you question, though, at some point you've got to hit the Earth's crust, but yeah. Anyway, that's a whole nother matter entirely. But I'm a bit of a sucker for those as well.
So you have, you also have another podcast called My Kind of Weird, is that right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that one.
So that's finished, at least for now, until I can pick that back up. Unfortunately, time is just a matter of, it gets in the way of podcasting. But it's basically, I get a guest on and I ask them to pitch me. They're kind of weird, and then I pitch the same. So it has to be something readable, something watchable, and something listenable. Hmm. And then we pitch it to each other, trying to convince the other person if they liked it. Ideally, before the episode has even started, we've listened to each other's picks, so we sort of can talk about it a bit more. So it's not just sort of a blind pitching. I thought about doing it that way because we could churn through episodes a lot quicker, but it just wouldn't work out. It wouldn't be that interesting to listen to. So we've had some interesting guests on there. So we've had the voice actress from one of the voice actresses from. Actually, I should correct myself. Voice people, because she's now non-binary. Mm-hmm. And again, I just got that wrong, but her pronouns just really get me. But they were the one of the voice actors on Aliens Fireteam, which is a pretty recent game that's come out. We've had one of the guys we had on was a cameraman and lighting for Blair Witch Project, who has now gone on to release other indie films, and he does a lot of fictional podcasts for Shudder and even for Amazon as well. So we've had some interesting people in there for sure.
Oh yeah, that's cool. I like that idea too. I could think of, you know, several things I would say, but I like that idea. I hope you bring it back at some point, but I understand, you know, time constraints is huge.
Yeah, well, it's not just that. It's also the researching it, because every now and again, when it was something readable, everyone's like, oh, can it be anything? Yeah, it can be anything. Then they give me a 500-page novel to read. It's just like, if I do bring it back, I may have to limit it to graphic novels.
Yeah.
Just to make it easy. Yeah, because that was part of the time constraints. I mean, recording it's easy. And I've got a producer that I pay to chop it all up together, because I got sick of looking at Audacity all the time. But yeah, it's the actual listening and the consuming and digesting and figuring out what your thoughts are on the thing. So that was the time consuming part.
Yeah, I could see that. So do you do any other podcasts? Do you do one for Soda and Telepaths?
We did a long time ago, but the co-host, when I first started, for me, it was a selfish thing to get a podcast out and about so I could talk about what I was doing. I had a co-host who's a good friend of mine. And he had a sort of this rare form of blood cancer. He's fine now, but at the time he wasn't really sure it could have gone either way. So he kind of wanted sort of like a, I guess a time capsule, if you will, for his kid, so that later on in, you know, in life, that his kid would have something out there for him. But he's actually fine now, and that's part of the problem, because he's fine, he's too busy, he's out living life, and good for him.
yeah, wow, that's a crazy story. So you had the an article that recently went on your site about, we were talking on Twitter, and you showed me this article called Humans Aren't Going to Make It, 15 Post-Apocalyptic Comics You Should Read. You want to talk about that? Did you write? First of all, you didn't write this, did you? Didn't someone else write it? Or
no, I didn't write it. No. But
you read it.
Yeah, I've read most of the entries there. So
yeah,
we can certainly talk about that.
Okay.
So that article, we covered a whole range of different things. IPs around post-apocalyptic comics and graphic novels and manga. First one we covered was, which 100% I recommend to anyone who hasn't checked it out. If you're a fan of The Matrix and sort of that dystopic sort of setting, Akira is definitely a manga that everyone should check out. It's sort of arguably dystopic cross post-apocalyptic. It's sort of hailed as one of the best comic books ever written. So it basically involves these two friends, Tetsuo and Kaneda, who have these paranormal abilities and that they start to sort of tap into and take out sort of the fascist sort of government that runs everything. So it was a huge influence on The Matrix, as was other animes and mangas like Ghost in the Shell is a definite one that was highly influential in The Matrix as well. We tapped into Savage Highway as the second entry. So that one's a brutal post-apocalyptic tale published by humanoids. It's about of two opposites who are forced to unite to survive in a violent post-cataclysmic world. So that's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, which is sort of hard to get. It's a manga about a princess of a small kingdom on a post-apocalyptic Earth with a bioengineered ecological system, who becomes involved in a war between kingdoms while an environmental disaster sort of threatens humankind. So that one's lots of fun. There's Commandy, The Last Boy on Earth. If you're a fan of old sort of 70s era DC comics, that one's good. V for Vendetta. That's kind of pre-apocalyptic. We're kind of sort of getting that one in by the skin of our teeth. I don't think I really need to talk too much about the comic book series that was written by Alan Moore and illustrated by David Lloyd, because there's the famous movie out there. Mm-hmm. So which is more relevant than ever, given the way some governments have been running things lately. there's Wild Blue Yonder, which was our 6th century, which it's in the near future, where mankind has destroyed the Earth, pollution has run rampant, most of the world is dangerous to live in, and then involves sort of bloodthirsty air pirates. So that's lots of fun. Mm-hmm. The 7th entry was Wasteland. That's a sci-fi comic book series, which involves disasters in modern society, which has changed the world's coastlines. Have you seen any of these, read any of these so far?
I read Savage Highway. Akira, I only saw the anime. Wasn't there an anime for the Valley of the Wind one too?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, probably. Almost every manga has been made into an anime.
Yeah, but that's it. I read one issue, I think, of Wasteland, and it was a long time ago. Yeah, because this is from 2006. But that's about it on these top ones.
The Wonder Woman Dead Earth one is sort of a post-apocalyptic vision of Wonder Woman, as if the only sort of hero left is her. And it's presented in this stunning magazine-sized comic book format, which is really cool. So it's a really good sort of conversation piece to have, or, you know, sort of coffee table book to have around. There's Lazarus. Sweet Tooth was our 10th entry. So, I mean, that one's lots of fun.
Yeah.
Have you seen the show?
Oh yeah, I like the show a lot.
Mm-hmm. It I actually think the show's a little bit better, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I find that the comic books that sort of don't go into too much detail but leave sort of room for screen writers to sort of elaborate on tend to make better IP. Like, yeah. For instance, a good example of that, obviously, Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And then Umbrella Academy is really good. Yeah. It's like the comic book is so much fun, but the how they actually go into the interpersonal conflicts of all the characters, mm-hmm. I mean, it's sort of in there, but not to the detail that the show has gone in.
Yeah,
into.
Yeah.
Our 11th entry was Why the Last Man. The biggest travesty of this year is the fact that the show got cancelled.
Yeah. Yeah, even Stephen King said that.
Yeah. Oh, man. Have you read the comic?
No, I never did. I saw the show, though, but that was it.
It has an ending, which made me cry, and I'm not a crier when it comes to comics. I'm not a laugh out loud. I'm not sort of a very emotional person. Mm-hmm. When it but the ending deeply affected me. That's one of those exceptional sort of works of fiction, post-apocalyptic works of fiction that is definitely a must-read. Mm. I'd put it up there alongside, you know, like Mad Max and any of Ramiro's Of the Dead films. It's exceptional.
Wow. I need to check it out.
You really like it, I think. And it was also part of the Vertigo, DC Vertigo run as well, which a lot of those comics were incredible. There's Grendel Warchild, which is number 12 on the list. Low, which was like a sort of a set billions of years in the future after the start of the Sun's expansion into a red giant has pretty much left the Earth uninhabitable. Something that a lot of people don't know is that the Sun is constantly expanding. Mm-hmm. So in a couple of billion years, the Sun will actually consume the Earth. That's something to worry about if you're looking to live that long.
Yeah, I won't be alive.
Animosity, which was one where every animal in the world has suddenly gained the ability to talk and think like a human. So that's lots of fun. It's in a post-apocalyptic world. And then there's, of course, The Walking Dead, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. But there's one that my writer didn't cover on this article, which I think needs to be added there. Geiger. Written by Geoff Johns, who is a famously well-known superhero writer. It's basically it's a post-apocalyptic comic which is self-contained. It's just one volume, so it's sort of, you don't really need to spend much money to catch up with it. I think it's about $30. And it's about this man who is turned into a living nuclear bomb, basically.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's kind of like this very sort of old school, almost like the Shadow. Did you ever see the movie or the comic, The Shadow?
No.
The Spirit? It's kind of like that, but with a cloak and sort of like just running around, taking care of innocent people, but at the same time he can't be near people for too long because he gives off radiation. So it's one of those sort of happy but sad stories at the same time. Very bittersweet. But that's a good one as well to throw in there.
Huh. That's interesting. Now, is this list is in order? Or what's that? I didn't hear.
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. I think that's interesting. And especially, like, Akira, you know, there's no arguing that. A Savage Highway was really good. Now, what I thought was funny was here on, where is it, on Sweet Tooth, this kind of gets to me, this kind of thing. You know, I'm kind of a curmudgeon when it comes to this, but on Sweet Tooth, there's a USA Today quote, and it says, Sweet Tooth is Mad Max with antlers. And that drives me crazy because when people call anything Mad Max that has anything to do with post-apocalyptic, it's like, no, that's not Mad Max. Or maybe when they say Mad Max, they're thinking of Mad Max 2, or they're thinking of Fury Road, you know, but they're not thinking of the original, which is way different. So yeah, that kind of thing always gets to me. I'm like, which one do they mean? And do they really, have they seen Mad Max?
Yeah, it's sort of a annoyance amongst the comics community. It's all these well-known publications that don't talk about the comic, but then as soon as the comic is adapted into TV or film, all of a sudden there'll be brand new covers with quotes from entertainment companies which didn't exist back when the comic first came out. So. So it's sort of that ongoing annoyance for many comic book fans. Yep.
I could see that, yeah. So speaking of comics, though, you recently were saying on Twitter that you're going to do more of a focus on comics. So what brought that on?
I feel that there's very much a... amongst the comics community that do reviews, there's very much a style of review where it's intro, this is what the story's about, a little bit about the writer and the the story they've created. Then there's the art, which probably goes for 2 or 3 sentences. Mm-hmm. End of article. Yeah. I feel like you need to just do a bit more with that. And it's not just comic book critics, it's everyone. I feel like you need to delve a bit deeper into what the creators were trying to evoke, what their mindset was, certainly what their inspirations were, and how they affected the overall, how that affected the overall story. So, yeah, that's what I mean by that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. You want to get deeper. You feel like a lot of the, and I agree too, a lot of reviews are very kind of on the surface and yeah, and not deep enough. Yeah, I could see that. And I think it's like you were talking about with books. I've read so many book reviews that are the same way, where you're like, did they even read the book, or did they read the back of the book and then just and read other people's reviews, or, you know? So
yeah.
I feel like people are doing that. Like they're just kind of cheating their way through a few of these reviews and just for hits, you know? So yeah, I think that's important. I think that's a good point that you made.
I think SEO is partly to blame as well, because as soon as something is coming out that's by a publisher, people just want to cover it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, I've seen articles which, it's kind of, you know, deep running a website nerd knowledge, but in order to rank on Google, you need to have at least a 500-worded article. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it, you know, is flagged as thin content and it won't show anywhere. So I feel like a lot of reviewers and critics, especially for bigger sites, and it's probably not their fault, they're probably given 10 things to review a day by their editor-in-chief. Yeah. But it feels like the first 2 paragraphs is just pulled from the press release.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've done that game. I'm now in my 4th year of doing this. I've done that game of doing the, you know, the hope that, you know, if you copy and paste a press release in hopes that you might, you know, pick up one keyword here or there and then get seen, it doesn't work like that. So yeah, it's, and not only that, but Google have just done an update where they're actually favoring websites like yours and like mine that have a niche, that want to see more relevant content. I don't know how they're doing it, but apparently their algorithm now picks up websites who are just writing for the hits. And if it just looks like, if you've written something and it just looks like every other article out there, it just won't rank anymore.
That's so good. That's good news.
It's next level nerd stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. It's you know, I've been writing. I was a journalist for many years. I've been doing this for probably close to 15 years. And, you know, in the beginning, it was very much where you could write whatever you wanted, and people wanted to feel a connection, and they, you know, and then it got in probably, I don't know, 2011, around there, it got to the point where it was like, you have to write this keyword 5 times in your article, and you have to make sure that you have these, you know, this many words, like you said, 500 words. And it was to the point where it was like, am I really even writing anymore? Is it? So I got out of that for a while. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that brings me, it makes me think of something that I definitely wanted to talk to you about too, was AI. So,
Yeah.
I know how you feel about this, but so AI.
Actually, I'm neither for nor against.
Oh, okay.
It's just like NFT, I'm very, very Switzerland on the whole situation. I get it, but at the same time. Yeah. Anyways, you had a question.
Well, I just think, you know, when you're talking about how these articles have to be a certain size and everything, it reminds me of AI writing, which I looked into for an article one time. I did some research for an article, and I was just amazed at how this is happening and how people are getting the software like Jasper, and they're writing entire, and people are writing books, and it's all by AI, and it's basically copying other people's stuff and then rearranging the words so that it's not plagiarism, and it's crazy to me. But and so with that in mind, you know, I think Google probably said, you know, we need to do something about this because there are people basically writing entire articles and making a lot of money off of not doing any work. But hand in hand with that was art, AI art. And I, you know, I'm a, when it first came out, when it first got big, I guess earlier this year, I played around with it quite a bit. And I have an anthology out with a cover of the AI art, and I'm a big fan, but I'm also a traditional artist. I went to art school and I love painting and all that. So I, you know, from both sides of that spectrum, I'm both fascinated and a little scared, you know, at what this could be. But I'm the thing that I'm most fascinated about is the possibilities. You know, I think right now, this could be a really deep topic, but I feel like right now, AI art is a thing that artists aren't really doing. It's more like people who couldn't paint these things, and they're throwing in a couple words, and it's coming out with this masterpiece, and they're like, wow, I feel creative right now. I feel, you know, accomplished. And it's pissing off a lot of artists, you know, to be honest. So you're pretty much neutral on this or what?
Like it's, I see the benefit. So there's sort of the argument. So I received a press release, within this week. And it's for the world's first AI art generated comic book presented in omnibus form. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of felt in two minds about it. But then I put that on my Twitter, and then the responses I got back were, well, on one hand, it's not that good, but on the other hand, artists can play around with ideas without having to spend hours and sometimes days on a canvas before they realize that this just isn't working. So that's one sort of perspective for it. I mean, the other perspective for it is it's stealing art from different locations and then blending it together into one sort of, you know, orgy of art and color, and yeah, it just looks awful sometimes. The other perspective as well is another person commented on that tweet I put up is that they're someone who has a disability who has severe arthritis in their hands, but you used to be an artist. Mm. So, you know, what do you say to that?
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I always heard when this first came out that they couldn't do comic books with it because they couldn't recreate the same character over and over again in different positions and different, you know, action scenes and things like that. But apparently they can now. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because, you know, it used to be just amazing environments and scenery and stuff like that. And now it's really getting specific, and I don't know. It seems scary.
Yeah, well, it does. But on the flip side, we now know that Skynet's not going to take out humans because it's too busy building AI art.
Yeah, who would have ever thought that Skynet would be an artist, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
That's funny.
Neither for nor against it. The whole NFT art, you know, argument, a lot of people in the comics community especially are very against it. But they're the same types of people that complain that people aren't buying their art. And then, but then my argument is, well, this is an avenue to take to sell your art. And now you're complaining about the fact that it can't. I think it's the mass reproduction of it that some people have issues with, but then comic books are mass produced.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things. But at the same time, like, am I sick of the monkey NFTs going for thousands of dollars? Yes.
Yeah.
Or it's the same cat, you know, same monkey with a different hat. It's that's just crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I guess one thing I was doing a little bit, and this is getting away from post-apocalyptic, but I really like this topic because I feel like AI is dystopian, you know. One thing I've been trying to do, or I've been thinking of doing and trying a little bit is generating something with AI art, giving it the prompts, seeing what it comes up with, and then from there painting it traditionally. And I feel like that's, I don't know, I feel like it's kind of fun right now. I haven't really like put any of it out there and shown anyone because I'm, you know, it's pretty crazy, you know, what the AI comes up with. And I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know if I feel like it's, you know, it's not my idea, but I mean, people copy all the time with art as far as references. So I don't know. That's one avenue, I think.
I think the biggest argument is that people and around the ethical issue of AI, and yeah, we're getting into real nerd speak now, but is around the sort of the energy output of computers required to run websites and algorithms that create AI interfaces for people to use, as well. That's certainly the argument with NFTs. But look, I come from a corporate background, and there's always there's sort of this trend in corporate world right now where the ethical thing is there's the green emissions offset targets that, you know, big companies are saying themselves now. So they figure, okay, if we have a carbon footprint, which we spend $5 million on carbon emissions, if we then donate $6 million into green initiatives, doing the right thing, aren't we?
Yeah.
And but the thing is, the carbon emissions are still there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's the same thing with people who are saying they're making a stand by not using NFTs, but the majority of those people making those stands are on Twitter, which the energy output of running Twitter would be massive. So it seems quite selective in the outrage.
I guess
kind of like Earth Hour, where everyone, you know, decides to turn off their lights and for an hour, but it's not like the factories and the energy companies have stopped producing energy for that hour. It's just very selective. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like we're kind of in the Wild West when it comes to a lot of this, and you know, they'll figure it out in the next few years, but. I don't know. Maybe they won't.
I feel like it's sort of at the point when you remember when Netscape came around? Like,
Came
out? Yeah, and everyone was buying into Netscape, and then it just crashed.
Yeah.
People realized, oh, there's nothing tangible to investing in this company. I'm just investing into this company. And then it just crashed. I feel like it's kind of like that's happening again with AI and NFTs to an extent, where people are just throwing money at it.
I could see that. I, you know, as someone who has money sitting in the stock market waiting for it to go back up, it's a sore topic. Like, you know, crypto and all that kind of stuff. It's one of those things.
I'll tell you what is wild about that stuff. The GameStop documentary on Netflix. That's wild.
Oh, yeah. That is good. I saw that. Yeah. That's a whole thing. That's a whole different topic. Well, let's get back to media. I was curious to know. Now, we talked about your favorite game, post-apocalyptic. We talked about comic books, stuff like that. And what would you say is your favorite post-apocalyptic movie?
Oh.
Put you on the spot here.
Yeah.
or is there even one?
Yeah. No, it's probably Terminator.
Oh, okay. The original?
The original.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. Firstly, that sort of that scene before the army commando was sent back in time. I can't remember his name. Kyle something. Anyways, that scene is just harrowing with like the grey, you know, the skulls and the mass graveyards and just the sort of robotic run tanks that are just running over them, and then you see the flying sort of cybernet vehicles. And that in itself is just harrowing. But then also you for the rest of the movie when you finally get to 1982, I think it was, or 81. Which I find interesting that Terminator and Alien and Predator, they were all made within a space of 3 years. That's totally unrelated. But so it in essence is arguably a horror film, slasher film. With the constant Terminator going after Sarah Connor throughout the entire thing. So it's probably Terminator. I think in terms of modern films, Mad Max and Fury Road is sort of the easy answer, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But I really liked the X-Men Days of Future Past. Because that is post-apocalyptic, so it's two stories told. The post-apocalyptic part of that story is grim. In all post-apocalyptic storytelling should be grim. It should be, you know, humanity on its last legs trying to figure stuff out, there should be some, the trope of the angry man in the colony yelling at the people who actually know how to get stuff right, and he should get knocked out by the butt of a weapon, and he should, you know, betray them later on in the film or the comic or the TV show. Like, all that stuff, it needs to be grim, because it's a it's definitely a narrative and a commentary on humans. When they're put their backs against the wall, the real person comes out.
Yeah, I never thought about that, but you're totally right about Terminator being a horror film. You know, all the classics, Friday the 13th and Halloween, where, you know, Michael Myers is stalking Jamie Lee Curtis. And it's funny that that's exactly the same thing. I never thought about that. But I'm a huge fan of horror movies. I mean, I probably watched horror movies before I was supposed to. My parents were big fans, and they, my sister's 8 years younger than me, and she, when she was 2 years old, her favorite movie was Nightmare on Elm Street. So, I mean, we're all normal people. Like, we're all, you know, none of us are psychopathic killers, you know, that I know of. And it's funny, we just grew up, you know, with that in our household. And I would say even more, I mean, this is a shock to a lot of people, but even more than post-apocalyptic, I do love horror movies probably even more. So that's another reason I like just sitting here talking to you, because I feel like that's kind of what you're about too, right?
Yeah. I definitely love my horror and science fiction. I think in equal parts, sci-fi horror is definitely my all-time favorite. Oh, yeah. Subgenre, because it's taking the, you know, two aspects of two amazing pop culture genres. So yeah, that's definitely my favorite mix. I mean, you could probably say that Aliens is a little bit apocalyptic in the way that they've tried to terraform this planet and the entire colony has been wiped out, and you know it's just bunch of troops on the ground trying to, what were they trying to do again? Take over the colony and then decide, oh, and then wait for someone to take them back, and then, God. And it was just all for, you know, the measure of profit for what was it, Weyland Yutani?
That's how it always is.
Corporation, yeah.
It's always the corporation, yeah. We have this conversation all the time at the site where we talk about, you know, what is post-apocalyptic? Where, you know, could Game of Thrones be post-apocalyptic because it actually happened after a big, you know, cataclysm? And sure, you know, all these different things happen. Conan the Barbarian happened supposedly after a big event like that. So, I mean, there's so many different things. But at some point you have to say, well, you know, we have to figure the primer for what is the thing that we go to. And it's always Mad Max. It's always, you know, cars that are, you know, all beat up with spikes on them and stuff like that. And armor, you know, and kind of reusing materials and fighting for gasoline and, you know, stuff like that. That's always what it is. And I'm all on board with that because that's one of my favorite movie growing up was Mad Max, the original. You know, did you know this? I don't know if you knew this being from Australia, but did you know that in America, we had an overdubbed version of that until like 2000. So when I was growing up, we heard a horribly American dubbed version of that movie until I was an adult. And then we finally got access to the actual original audio. And I'm like, this is so much better. What? I don't know why they did that. It's crazy.
That's bonkers. I live in a country where in the 90s we had like five channels. Three if you lived in, you know, sort of the a remote area. And this was in the day where they would put on like old horror films and Star Trek episodes really, really late at night. They would go, oh, okay, that episode works. Okay, great. Heaps of people are watching that episode. Great. So I saw like probably about the same Star Trek episode about four or five times growing up, not to mention, a lot of things was, a lot of horror films were repeated a lot. I'm pretty sure I saw Nightmare on Elm Street quite a few times growing up.
Yeah.
Like two or three times easily.
Yeah, it's a classic. So I guess that has a lot to do with it. Your love for that. That's cool. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I think that should do it for the show. I really enjoyed talking to you. I think we could do this again sometime if you're up for it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, anything from movies, TV shows, and comics. I'm getting more and more into comics lately, so maybe next time I'll have a little bit more under my belt, but and you know, books, all that kind of stuff. So so Anthony, again, awesome. Thank you for coming on the show. This was fun. I really appreciate it, and I will put links to all of your stuff in the show notes for today. But do you want to go ahead and say them for anyone who doesn't read the show notes of where we could find you?
Sure. So go to SaturnTollPass.com. We're pretty active there. And then go to, if you're on Twitter, go to @SodaTelepaths with an S at the end. And come say hello.
Definitely. That's awesome. Well, thanks again, Anthony. And thanks everyone for listening. Be sure you check us out on social media as well and check out the website at postapocalyptic.com. So that is it for me. I'm signing off. And as always, stay alive out there and always be ready for the big one. Bye-bye.